Language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to another edition of Technology Bites.
All right, welcome to the show. This is Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flickbid.
I'm Barrett.
Ah, ha, 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 ha. Who are you again?
I think I'm 12.
Yeah, flip mics around, so no, I thought it was 1 through 3, and it was 2 through 4.
Yeah, I'm using the other one.
It's our fault. And he's...
Groovehouse.
Yay. All right, so Pete's not here tonight. He had some business to tend to, so he'll be so late getting into the show. It'll be next week before we hear from him.
I kind of dig the case on this. Like, at first it looked like a case, but it's built in.
Yeah,
it's a polycarbonate. It feels kind of funky, but I kind of like how it just kind of sits in there. It looks like it's a little bit more rugged than
so what
other things I have my hands on.
What are you talking about?
We have a Lumia.
Lumia 1020. It's the new flagship from Nokia. Or, as Steve Ballmer calls it, Nokia.
Now, it's got a giant, like, housing for the
It's pretty thin.
Leg.
It's as thin as my Nexus 4. And
except
it's
for the bump.
It's got a bulge.
Yeah.
But that bulge, that's a 42 megapixel bulge. Or 41 megapixels.
It's a 42 megapixel.
They're pretty proud of their bulge.
It makes for a strange... I mean, it's a built-in kind of...
It's a 41 megapixel
camera. Yeah.
It sure is.
Why?
In bright yellow.
Yeah, it's other color options.
Black, white, and yellow.
With a crappy lens.
41 megapixels of nothing.
It's a Carl Zeiss lens.
Is it?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's a lens.
You would think they would have Zeiss written on there.
I think it is.
It's unlike anything Zeiss I've seen, because they would have this word Zeiss on it. Maybe.
It's not Zeiss-like?
It's not Zeiss-like.
Gesundheit.
Yes. All right. Well, that's pretty cool. That's too many megapixels for me, I think.
What do you in Groovehouse shoot with? It's like
20 some odd.
Yeah. Wow.
20 some odd. The next batch. Oh, I hate that. The next batch of DSLR high end DSLR cameras will be 36.
So when are they going to catch up to Nokia?
Well, they'll never make phone calls. Hopefully.
Yep.
Well, Sony is Sony's about to release their they're going to release a full frame version of their next camera, which is their mirrorless, completely, just a sensor with a lens on it camera. They're going to put one of those out full frame. And they're also talking about their next batch of DSLRs aren't going to be DSLRs at all. They're not going to even have any mirror flip up at all. It's going to be straight to the sensor. So that's going to be interesting.
Huh.
All right. Well, welcome to what?
I just can't get picture that.
What?
Are you just holding a lens? And
oh, no, that's
over?
A different that's a different thing.
Oh, the sensor and the lens.
Sony is about to release also a cameraless lens. It's a lens with a built-in CMOS sensor on it or a CCD sensor on it, and it takes pictures and it communicates wirelessly with your tablet or phone to upload the image.
There is no spoon.
The camera is a lie.
Steve Ballmer probably says Impala, too.
6'4" Impala.
Wasn't he? No, he was working. I said, did he work for GM? It was Procter & Gamble is who he was working for before he went to Microsoft.
As long as he doesn't say vehicle and cement.
That sounds right to me.
It's cement.
Oh.
All right.
What is it?
I say concrete.
It is cement. Not cement. It's pecan, not pecan.
Let us cement our love.
Eek.
It is pecan.
It's pecan.
It's pecan.
Not, it's not pecan.
Pecan is what irritates me.
Pecan.
Or pecan.
Pecan.
Pecan. I've
pecan. It's a pecan. I'm going to pee in this can.
Oh.
Vehicle. Not vehicle. Vehicle.
Vehicle.
Vehicle.
Not vehicle.
But vehicular.
Motorcycle.
But vehicular.
Vehicular, yes, but not vehicle.
Hmm.
I
say vehicle.
That's because you're from here, and so am I, but I don't want to sound like it.
But I say pecan, that's from here, too.
Yeah. Or pecan tea.
No.
Get a rope.
No.
Technology. Bits. Bits. Bits.
Piss me the bits.
Technology.
Technology. All right. Well, we're going to remind you once again, since we have this opportunity, that there is no official Houston-based geek gathering. Oh, crud. I can't go now that I think about it. There was no Houston-based geek gathering going on here in Houston. Afflicted, Barrett, and myself are going to go to Vegas for DEF CON.
To Vegas.
Track. Which is evidently canceled.
It's canceled.
Yeah, we heard it was canceled this year.
It is canceled.
That's canceled.
Crud. I can't go. I just got approved for press credentials to go to Space City Con, and it's the same weekend as DEF CON. I can't
Jay's
go.
Canceled.
I'm canceled.
What?
Space City Con.
What's that?
It's a, let me see if I can.
It's like Comic-Con.
Yeah, I saw that. It looks kind of cool, only it's
but
here in Space
here.
City. So you're not going to go to DEF CON? You're going to skip it for Space City Con?
Really?
I'm tempted. It'd be a lot cheaper.
And DEF CON's canceled. So.
DEF CON's canceled, so I can go
to
Space City Con.
Actually, I hear Space City Con's canceled.
Now, we don't want to get in trouble now. We better explain ourselves.
Space City Con is not canceled. The beauty of Space City Con...
DEF CON, on the other hand...
Definitely canceled.
Totally canceled.
Definitely canceled.
Now, Space City Con has the benefit of being, like, down the street from my house. I mean, like, I could walk to Space City Con like I did to BronyCon if I had gone.
I didn't know there'd be bronies here.
Wait, this isn't Space City BronyCon? No, so... I just
by chance walked into a brony convention.
Wearing my tail. And my mane.
Hoof bump.
But Space City Con, if you didn't get to go to San Diego Comic Con and you've been seeing it all over the news, Space City Con might be a good opportunity. It looks like they got.
Is this their first year? Is this the one that is a repeat of they've done in years past?
I don't know. I didn't know anything about Space City Con until somebody mentioned it.
What's the other cons that were here?
Well, Onicon used to be Apollocon.
Apollocon.
Apollocon. Onicon.
They're going to have... Space City Con is going to have... We're going to have a handful of... Really
oh, wow. They've got Robert Picardo, the Doctor from DS9. Chekhov is going to be there.
Yeah. Matt Mercury.
Yeah.
Looks like it's going to be a good... Chekhov, yeah. And they're going to have a lot of Voyager and Deep Space Nine stuff going on. So it's not like a Trek Con or True Trek Con. This is like a spinoff.
It's everything.
It's spinoff con. But it looks like a... Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a good con, too. And that's just... Well, I'm going to the canceled DEF CON because I've already got tickets.
And a hotel room.
I can cancel the hotel room. Unfortunately, I can't cancel the plane tickets.
Give me your hotel room. Don't cancel.
They just sit... It's funny because, you know, DEF CON... The group rate for DEF CON at the Rio during this window of opportunity was really cheap on the hotel rooms, like 105.
It averaged out to about $100 a night.
Yeah, about $100 a night to stay at the Rio, which in a suite of all things too is a good sized room. Then they all those pre-sale tickets went away and the price jumped up to like 300.
When I looked, yeah, the weekend rates were $350 a night.
And so, but apparently there must be something available because I just got an email from Rio saying, and you might want to check.
And I checked. There, you can get $30 rooms like Tuesday and Wednesday and maybe Thursday, but then it's sold out over the weekend.
Well,
so
they sent me a thing that said I can upgrade my room to a strip view where I can see the strip and the, I guess it's not that great a view, but
for, it's from far away.
From far away. Like with binoculars. This room doesn't come with binoculars.
Just take Dwight's camera.
But $10 more a night to get a good strip facing room.
I would pay your $10 if they could somehow finagle me into your room because I want to stay on the site. I'm staying off site right now.
Where are you staying?
I was going to stay at the Palms. Mm-hmm. I had a big suite, but I'm thinking about going to the
Palms. Is like way
stay.
Out. It's away from.
Well, it's where it's right next to the Rio.
It's right next to the Rio, which is way out.
Yeah, the Rio is
7.2 miles away from city center.
Yeah,
yeah. The Palms is probably about a quarter mile from the Rio.
Palm has the Ghost Bar, yes. Which is a wonderful bar.
I never went there.
I've been once before. It's pretty popular on the weekends. It's not.
It's where Britney Spears went before she had her abortive wedding.
Her abortive wedding.
Yeah, she got married like for 20 minutes and that night.
The hotel that I liked that we got to go see, we had dinner over at
Cosmo,
Cosmopolitan. That is an interesting hotel. That is a very interesting casino hotel.
And it's going to be like 170 degrees when you're there, too.
It's like Texas without the humidity.
It's right. A dry heat.
Yeah.
It's a dry heat.
It's a very dry heat. Oh, the dry heaves will come regardless.
Yeah, I was going to say, all you have to do is just get drunk and wander around in the Rio, and you'll probably eventually spend the night there somehow.
Well, so the most important thing to come out of all this is that there is no Houston Geek Gathering.
There's no Houston Geek Gathering.
If people still want to come out and hang out, they can, but we're not going to be there. Which actually may be an incentive for people to come out and hang out.
That's right.
I would imagine that some of the regulars... We'll probably still show up there, so if you want to go hang out at cons and do that thing. I try to talk Dwight into going in.
And I might.
Being our emissary.
It's very self-centered of us to think that it wouldn't happen unless we're there. I mean, that thing has a life of its own.
Well, it does kind of have a life of its own, I agree. But if somebody was to show up thinking that the hosts of Technology Bytes were going to be there, it'd be kind of disappointing. So it'd be like that scene in Galaxy Quest. So before the crew of the Galaxy Quest showed up. And everybody was just, you know, we're the host of Technology Bytes. That's what we paid our admission to come see. So anyway, it is canceled officially. You can still go there because cons isn't canceled. Consoled.
Unless, of course, they close in mourning.
Yeah, well, it just means I don't have to come up with a flyer this month, which is nice.
Maybe you should come up with a we're canceled flyer.
That would send out the wrong message.
Hey, The guy who played Q is going to be there. John, what's his name?
Oh, that's cool.
He's still alive?
He's still alive.
The Q continuum never dies.
Wait, which Q? The new Q or the old Q?
The Q from Star Trek, not the Q from
James Bond.
I was thinking James Bond.
No.
No, even from Star Trek.
The Q from Star Trek.
The guy that before that was, for a number of years, a wacky character on Days of Our Lives.
Wacky. All right, visit us online at geekradio.com. That is where we're... that is our internet presence. And you can also hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bytes. And you can contact us via the website at geekradio.com or you can email us. No, you just use the contact there. That'd be the best way. And that's all I got. And I was going to say we could do the info shop, but we can't.
No, but I want to talk about something newsy.
Do you want to talk about something newsy?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
What do you mean, oh, Lord? Who said that?
Was that you, Groovehouse?
Groovehouse?
Mm-hmm. No, it was
it's Flicted.
Flicted. All right. So I dropped like on intense impulse today. After just reading about this minutes after it was announced.
Oh, you bought one.
I bought a Google Chromecast.
It's like $30.
$35.
It's $35 bucks, but then you get 3 months of Netflix free. Mm-hmm. So if you're already paying for Netflix, it's like you're getting it for about $11.
All right. So I'm doing what I'm doing is I bought this thing. It's about 2 inches long. It's like an HDMI key, like a USB key, but it fits in your HDMI.
What's hilarious, though, is every time they have like images of it that I guess come from Google, promotional images or whatever, it's always plugged in, but it would never work.
Because it doesn't have the USB power.
Because they never have the USB power connector hooked into it.
Yeah, it has to have a USB dongle that has to go to a USB plug for the power, but there's also an external adapter.
TVs, though, right?
Huh?
You can probably power it from your TV if you've got a USB.
You still have to use that cable.
He's using USB for his Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I don't know. I may have two USB ports. If I have two USB ports, I'd
be. But the other thing is that, I didn't understand when everybody was freaking out about it today, because when I was first reading about it, it didn't seem that much different than options that already exist, and I was like, well, maybe it's because they think, oh, it's such a small form factor, it's just so amazing. I'm like, no, Roku's had a streaming stick now for months, and it also hooks into HDMI. It's even a little bit smaller than the Google one, but theirs isn't powered over USB, so you have to have an HDMI. You have to have a TV with an HDMI connector that's got the MHL or something.
Right.
Basically, it does power over HDMI.
Mm-hmm. So this is the reason I have an Apple TV, and I have a smart TV that has apps in it. But the main reason I'm interested in this is that you can work from you work from Chrome on your phone, on your laptop, on your iPad.
It has to be via Chrome.
Well, it picks up what it syncs with the Chrome. So that any bookmarks you have, you can push bookmarks over to
it. You push a tab.
Right.
You have to open a tab and push the tab.
Push the tab
like AirPlay.
But no, because it doesn't actually display what's on your laptop.
Right.
It'll actually reload the page. This is from my reading.
Yes.
It'll actually reload the page from
it's not streaming from the device.
Like the Apple TV if you go to watch Netflix on it, not doing AirPlay.
Right.
It's actually streaming all the media itself. It's not
right.
Right. It
just pulls the URL and then loads it itself.
And because it has its own operating system, so it pull. And so you can actually switch away from your tab and do other things on your device.
Right.
While that media content's playing, so it's like if you're trying to read a book and your kids are screaming and they need to be entertained, you could throw a funny YouTube video up to entertain them for 5 minutes.
But I also read that they currently don't have iOS support out yet. You can do it on Apple laptops. They have the application that you have to install and all that stuff. But they don't have the iOS version.
Well, supposedly you can control your YouTube. The iOS YouTube app will work with it. This is what they said on stage today. So,
because I was reading like a hands-on review of somebody who actually got one right after the presentation and went and played with it.
Well, they ship on the 27th, or at least the one I have said it will ship on the 20th. So hopefully by the time that comes, it'll give them time to get their apps.
They also
out
said
there.
That it's the review basically said, yeah, this is pretty cool, but it's not as slick as people are making it out to be. Like, especially they were saying the I forgot what they call it, like throwing the tab over to the whatever that thing's called, the stick. Isn't really necessarily real smooth, and it doesn't stay synchronized. Like if you're actually playing something and you pitch it over, it'll get out of sync with your other device. So,
So you can throw web. Can you throw all web content?
Yes.
How about anything the Chrome browser can render?
So if you're looking at a web page in Chrome, you can send that to the TV.
So if you're a cord cutter and you've got a page that's displaying like HTML5 video. Say, like, from the CBS.com website, because CBS doesn't send anything new over to Hulu. you and they have all their stuff free there. You could watch CBS content.
Another thing they said is that
on your TV,
the content that you're watching on your laptop or device, once you tab throw it over to
it runs that, off the device, not off your PC.
It's lower quality video.
Oh, interesting.
That's another thing.
I would assume. Yeah. Right,
so, since you and I are both Apple TV owners,
mm-hmm.
we had talked earlier before we came on the air about one of the things you told me. It had the Chromecast, this mm-hmm. new device from it's Google, I guess, mm-hmm. right? It has Amazon.
No, they are.
They're working.
Working on getting Amazon. They want to get Amazon and Hulu on it.
Okay, so right now, as it exists, let's just say it had Hulu and mm-hmm. Amazon on it already. Is there any other benefit? I mean, if you're as an Apple owner to have this thing,
Often Amazon content is like a dollar cheaper than iTunes content. So if you a movie that says $5.99 on iTunes is $4.99 on Amazon, so there's a savings.
So after 35 rentals, it pays for itself.
Apple doesn't have Amazon on it.
I know.
But it does have Hulu,
right.
And it does have YouTube, right. And it does have Netflix.
Right.
And so that's one of the things. When they started talking about, like, well, this, what is it called?
Chromecast.
Mm-hmm.
This Chromecast, you can watch YouTube and Netflix. I'm like, yeah, you can.
You can watch that on anything.
And it's apps. I'm like, yeah, it sounds exactly like the Roku and the
right.
and the Apple TV right. and any number of other things.
Yeah. And the Apple TV has the added benefit of being able to throw whatever's on your screen on any device
with the AirPlay
right. via AirPlay onto your TV.
Right. So, but the big selling point for this is for $35, why the hell not?
I think the twist is if they get the ability to kludgily do browser-based stuff on it. That's an ad,
that's
right?
That's what I'm really interested
in. Because Apple isn't allowing that.
Right.
And the other thing is that Google opened up their API for it so that other people can write apps and put it on it. So
that's what I think
could,
is cool.
It
yeah.
could create a culture that provides a lot of value. At this point, I didn't see it as anything amazing that came out, anything particularly exciting. But it seems like there's a couple of things in place where at some point, it could be.
It's right. going to be
it's, and it's
be,
so cheap that
the price point
right.
is. Yeah,
exactly. I agree that the exactly. price point is cheap, but if we use the Google Glass algorithm, a thing
$1,500 Google Glass.
Okay, but Google Glass first edition pre-production mm-hmm. $1,500 for a device that'll probably retail for less than $300.
No.
Yeah.
About $500.
$500.
Soon, mandatory, though. Everyone must wear Google
no,
Glass.
No, what I'm saying is, though, that you have this $35 device. This is a first-generation device from Google, $35. In a year, they'll be paying you to take one.
Right.
It's first-gen. I don't know if the stuff that's conceivable for this kind of device will actually work on this first-gen device. So I'm thinking you're gonna spend $35. I spent, what I spent on my Apple TV, and it does everything I needed to do. I don't have any need to upgrade.
What is its wireless?
I think it's
802.11n.
It's in, yeah.
It's so also 2.5 and not 5 gigahertz.
But that's
2.4.
one of the things that
2.4,
I
I'm sorry, yeah,
kind of don't like about it is, I don't know. I find that with wireless, it's not always great, and so that's one thing I like about having an Apple TV is I have it plugged in, and so
oh,
I
have
never
an Ethernet
have to,
connection.
Yeah, so I never have yeah. to worry about wireless getting wonky or
yeah.
Something. Well,
ever since
it weird.
I moved my router into the TV room or my cable modem into the TV room, I have everything wired and it works so.
Yeah, good. I would wire anything up, especially if you're going to be there for more than a
but
year.
You
if
can't,
you're in the house.
But you can't wire up a Chromecast.
No.
Yeah,
well, you
no.
do have to plug it into USB to get power so that it doesn't look as beautiful as just this little thing plugged into
right.
your HDMI
It gets
port.
Clunky fast. And
it could just be a little loop, though, in the back of the TV, though. If you
oh, no,
it
you,
right.
can
you know?
Hide it so yeah. that nobody can see it.
Which is the way
I can hide it behind all the other stuff that I have behind the TV.
But the funny thing is that, it starts off, like, the promotional images are all just like, oh, it's this cute little, looks like a key. You just stick it in the HDMI. It's amazing. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we never showed you this picture, but you have to plug in a micro USB cord that comes out, the other side. So if you've plugged it into the edge of your TV, the cord might hang out even if you bent it. So they make an HDMI extender just in case, you know, it won't fit because you've got other stuff stuck in there. So now you've got like this, like, you know, 3-inch HDMI extender with this, you know, the Chromecast key, 2-inch key on it, with then micro USB coming out the other end. So now it's like 8 inches long, plugged into a power source somewhere.
$35.
I think if it's got to be running Linux, I bet people will get into it.
Oh yeah,
sooner
yeah,
or later,
they'll be hacking it.
That's what I think. That's why I got one, and that's why I'm getting.
I was going to,
mess around with it.
And then I wasn't sure, and I was like, "I'm like, it's only going to be $11. I should go ahead." And then by the time I waffled and decided, Amazon had already sold out their allotment. At least I assume that's what happened because it
you
went
didn't
from
buy
available
it from
to
Google.
No, I was going to buy it on Amazon because Google was going to take like weeks to ship it, and Amazon was shipping like next day.
Oh, see, mine ships on the 27th.
Well, that's pretty fast.
Yeah, I did it immediately as soon as I saw what it was, saw the price. I said, "Oh God, I've got $35. I spend more than that for a bottle of Maker's Mark, man. I'm gonna
see
do
the $35 bucks wasn't selling me, but I already buy Netflix, so to get three free months of Netflix that I'm already paying for, I'm basically getting the
device
for $10.
That part is appealing. That part is appealing, but I'm going to plug it in. What am I going to get that I don't already have? Nothing.
The ability to throw Chrome tabs kludgily to your TV.
I can do that already, basically.
But also, you know, it will improve quickly over time.
It'll improve quickly.
Yeah. Like Google TV.
They need a win.
This is a lot simpler. Google TV's problem was that it was too complex. This is not complex. That's another.
No, in 6 months to a year, this device is going to be beyond primitive.
Yeah, when Chromecast 3 comes out,
$35, I'll buy one of those.
I mean, as long as they keep tossing them at you, they're going to get you. You're going to just use up all the savings on cutting the cord on little $25, $35 devices that you can jam into your
TV. I'm already burning it up on buying subscriptions to television shows. Yeah. So.
Well, another thing they were talking about is, you know, a lot of people are like, "Oh my God, this is so amazing! It's so small. I can just put it in my pocket. I can carry it anywhere. I can plug it in at, you know, at the hotel and keep watching my stuff that I was watching. I'm tied into everything." And like, no, well, you also got to take the USB power connector, and you've got to be able to get on Wi-Fi because there's no wire connection. So you got to get on the hotel Wi-Fi,
which sucks.
And then the hotel Wi-Fi, your controller device, whatever it may be, has to also be on the Wi-Fi and be able to communicate with that device, which, depending on how their Wi-Fi is set up, may or may not work real well. So it's not quite as elegant and simple as, you know, they're making it out to be. Unless you're going to, you know, bring your own Wi-Fi hotspot. And then
I bring
you can
my
make
own
it
TV.
It's going to be nothing but a briefcase filled with dongles and doohickeys.
I have every wire but that wire.
I mean, you know,
that's how it works, huh?
I'm not saying that it's not a cool idea. It's just when it came out and people seemed to be freaking out about it, I just didn't.
Well, these things have been out for a while, for about a year or even more than a year. You can get little bitty sticks there on Android that does pretty much the same thing. They
well,
are
and
like
the Raspberry
an XBMC
Pi
and Raspberry
too.
Pi does the same thing. With the idea of it being like a USB stick form.
Except those can actually stream local media.
Yeah, yeah. They can do a lot
of
stuff.
This one cannot stream local media, except if you set up your own web server and start throwing tabs to
now,
local stuff.
The
maybe.
One thing that hasn't been discussed over beaten to death on this thing is that it adds AirPlay-like functionality, to non-Apple devices. So you conceivably could use your Android phone to do this. You could use your Windows PC to do this, which that to me is kind of cool. It becomes more AirPlay-like for non-Apple users. That's kind of a benefit for
non-Apple users.
Right, but not necessarily for, like, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, I'm currently up to date with all my Apple tech, and all of that stuff works. So it's, even for the price point, it's like I would not. It'd be one more thing to switch over to. I just wouldn't use it.
I personally still, you know, I tried to stream a soccer game to my TV over AirPlay, and I personally did not think that it was very good. I mean, if I was doing my desktop,
what were you streaming from?
Over
a web page?
No, from your phone, from your notebook,
from my desktop.
From your desktop?
Yeah, wired.
Now, I will say one thing I did not... One of the drawbacks I've seen on the AirPlay that I wasn't really happy about is I had I had a MP4 a video file on my computer that I opened up inside of my media player and then sent AirPlayed over to the TV and could not get much volume out of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, it sounded great on the computer, but there just wasn't a lot of amplification. It was almost like an unamplified audio signal going over. It was. I had to turn the TV way up. I couldn't get. I might have missed something, but it just. I could not get the volume. Huh. The one thing I was trying to watch.
The thing I wish is that I wish people that set up Netflix accounts, and this is probably controlled by Netflix. I wish that they would put like a decent amount of caching into the Netflix system so that, you know, you've got 10 minutes of video stored locally or something, or at least 5 minutes stored locally, so that when you get, you know, a short amount of network degradation for whatever reason, your Netflix movie doesn't all of a sudden like digitize up
and
like turn
blocky.
It seems
like they don't buffer very much right now.
No,
they've got about a second or two.
Horrible.
Like if anything hiccups, boom.
It's
you know, it goes.
So
yeah.
Annoying because the thing is that I don't want to pay as much as Apple wants to rent movies. I think it's stupid. When I can go rent a Redbox or something for $1, I shouldn't have to rent a movie for like $5. It's not. I don't understand.
I don't like how they do the timing on that either.
I don't understand pricing.
Yeah.
But I will say one thing I do like because, you know, every once in a while Apple put a rental on for $1. And so if I like it, I'll go ahead and choose to rent it. I've got 24 days to watch it or whatever. But it starts downloading it to the Apple TV and it caches it on there. So by the time it tells me it's ready to start watching, I know, like, I can hit play and I'm going to get, 720p. quality, unless I bought the HD version. I'm going to get good quality. The picture's going to be good. It's not going to do all that garbage messing up. But with Netflix, you know, I want to watch something. I hit play. First of all, it has to negotiate to see how fast it can stream. And then it starts streaming. And if at any point there's a hiccup, all of a sudden the quality drops and it gets blurry and it's annoying.
I haven't had that problem since I wired my Netflix.
We also don't have, 60 megabit down Comcast either.
It's true. Well, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air tonight with Technology Bites. We'll talk about whatever you got technology-wise, but you can call in and tell us what you have. 713-526-5738. Now, if Netflix was going to upgrade or change anything, it would be user accounts. I'm sick of getting these things recommended to me based on what Cynthia's been
They work there. That's coming.
Is it?
They
yeah.
used to have that
that's coming.
On certain, like, family accounts, like with discs or whatever. You had, like, sub-accounts.
Yeah, different queues. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you had different queues. But, yeah, they've never – and people keep saying it. And a few months ago I was looking at that because I was thinking about – and I was like, yeah, like, I don't want to have, you know, my Heather's kids over – you know, and they're watching, like, whatever cartoons, and now all of a sudden I'm getting recommended, right. You know, all these horrible cartoons right. that I don't want to watch.
Right, and recently watched goes way away, so I can't find what I was looking at.
Right.
Cynthia's been watching all of her Marple mysteries and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, so it's coming.
Yes,
nice.
Yes, they have said that, I think this summer, it's supposed to happen this summer.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. I see Groovehouse currently screening a call as we speak. So we have open lines, 713-526-KPFT. And we'll take calls about anything. If you want to talk about streaming media or media players, we're happy to talk about that. But we're also happy to talk about Windows 8, Linux.
Also, one other little quick tidbit of news. You know, the Apple news Developer juice. Center has been down. Because of a hack or because of a security researcher's notification, depending on what you think. But Apple has provided a roadmap tonight for how they're going to bring it back up and created a developer page, a status page, that shows the status of each component.
I believe that guy.
I think so, too. I think he's the one who did it.
I think Apple was trying to, like, spin it.
Yeah.
And
well, they haven't said yet that he's not. What they've said is that somebody asked, a journalist asked an Apple spokesperson if they knew who it was, and they said, we're not going to comment on that at this time, which means...
Well, they also said somebody tried to, and we're not sure what they might have gotten, but it would have been nothing good except email addresses and names. But, I mean, that guy's got a...
That's what
I mean, unless he faked it, which is possible, you know, he had a video with... He scrolled through.
It showed the names.
Yeah, he scrolled through 100 things with names and addresses. Right. I was looking for mine. I didn't see it, but
yeah. So anyway, it's coming back up, and if you go to my Twitter feed at D Silverman, I've got links to the status page and the developer update.
Another related to that is the Ubuntu forums.
Oh yeah, they got compromised.
That one got compromised, but bad, like. Now, they didn't get unencrypted passwords, but they got usernames, email addresses, and encrypted passwords of a lot of people. So they shut that down and emailed everybody and said that they're having to redo things and bring it back up. I got an email.
All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air, we got about 25 minutes or 20 minutes or so before we have to take a break at the top of the hour. So now's the time to call in. All the lines are open except for one, which is occupied by who, Groovehouse?
Up first on the show, that line is occupied by Dave.
Dave, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, just a quick update. I called you, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. I was supposed to call you last week. I called you about the get the iPod to turn the shuffle on and off.
Oh, yeah.
And I turned around and I did some research on Google, and I was reading the instructions. And I'm thinking, well, gosh, where's the rest of the answer? It was so simple. When the thing is playing, you just tap the screen, and then that bar shows up along with the little shuffle thing. You tap it, and it shuts the shuffle off and turns it on.
Oh, you touched it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that you can touch that screen. Touch that screen, it does all kinds of things.
Yeah. But when you don't know, you don't know.
You don't. That's true. When you don't know, you don't know.
So that was because he had asked me to reload it and download it and reinstall it or something. And
I thought you were actually trying to deactivate and were deactivating the shuffle, but it was still shuffling.
Yeah, it was shuffling, and I didn't want it to.
I know, but I thought you were pressing the shuffle button, you know, whatever is on the screen.
We were presuming you were pressing the shuffle.
The bar wasn't even up there. That was the problem.
Oh,
I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, as I was reading, it said hit the little shuffle thing. Well, the shuffle thing wasn't there.
Well, thank God we don't make our living off of supporting iPods.
But when you touch the screen,
it makes
that bar appear and disappear, reappear and disappear. And then you turn it on and off. That it took me every bit of, a half a second or so.
Yeah.
So, just an update.
Well, appreciate that. Thanks for your call and letting us know that you finally got it figured out.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Click. All right. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
Dwight's got his vibration back on.
Yes, this case makes it ups the vibrato. Let me put it on this and see if that helps.
Shirt pocket. Why don't you just give yourself a massage?
It's not the massage. It's the constant radiation on my boob that.
That I want you to lactate radioactive.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. You know,
moobs. All right. Well, I see Groovehouse is screening your call, and we have plenty of open lines. If you want to call in, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with Technology Bites. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we'll speak with Faisal.
Faisal!
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
All right. So, I got a question. For the longest time, I didn't buy one of these fancy smartphones and such because I'm a bit of an old school guy, and I really, really despise any lag whatsoever after I press a button on my cell phone, and it probably has more to do with, since I sort of know what goes on behind the scenes in hardware and firmware and stuff, that I don't see any good reason for there to be any lag whatsoever on a 1+ gigahertz dual quad core processor or whatever in popping up a simple display for example typing in a phone number, and this just annoys me to no end. And so after many years of putting it off, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I got a an HTC Sensation. This was the first dual-core 1.5 gigahertz phone that came out. I'm like, okay, I think now is the time to get one of these smartphones because this is just so insanely overpowered. You know, it's just going to be snap, snap, snap. But that wasn't the case. And a couple of weeks ago, my son destroyed my phone, and I'm thinking whether to get another one or not. But I'm still not convinced that that there's something out there that will satisfy my my need for a very extremely snappy interface.
Have you...
I don't really need bells and whistles. I just need a very simple phone, but it just has to be instant.
Yeah, have you been to a an AT&T or Verizon or Sprint or T-Mobile store and picked up the latest ones and played with them?
Yeah, my wife actually got a Galaxy S4, and I'm still not satisfied. I mean, it should be, maybe it's something psychological, but in my mind, it's a quad core, 1 or 2 gigahertz phone, and if there's any lag whatsoever, it's just like it's inexcusable in my mind.
What do you define as lag?
So,
what is your definition of lag? When you say it lags, what are you seeing?
Well, just, you know, when you want to open up the phone, like say you're in some application and you go to the home screen and you pop up, you know, the phone application to type in a phone number.
Right.
There's a little bit of lag over there. It's just, and when you start typing in a name and it searches through your contact list, in my mind, it seems that there's just so much, you know, fluff on these things that for very simple operations that could be absolutely instant.
I've got the iPhone now. I had the first Galaxy phone. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Really? IoT advisor said that, you know, there's a constant rule, you know, in these consumer electronic devices. Like the ratio between, you know, a tolerable amount of user interaction lag and stuff, and the processing power is like, it's sort of like a constant ratio. No matter how much hardware they throw at it, there's always, they keep adding enough bloat to maintain the tolerable limit.
You know, I've got an iPhone 5 in my hand right now. I press the button and there I instantly have the screen up. I've used an Galaxy S4 and an S3, and you press it and it happens. And I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. You may never be satisfied.
You may be one of those people.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. My experience, and I think the overall global experience, is that these things are snappy. They do respond quickly. But if you're looking for something to activate when you think about it before you even touch it, maybe that's the problem. But all the phones that I've used in the last few years, they're snappy and responsive, and I'm not sure what you're talking about.
There are cheap ones. I've gotten a hold of some European Android handsets that were just painfully slow to do anything with, but you get something modern, and that's not going to be an issue.
If his wife has an S4, and he's that is probably about the fastest smartphone there is right now.
Yeah.
And you still aren't happy with it.
I don't know. Sometimes, like, if you haven't done anything with it, you're sitting at the home screen, you click on the phone button, then, you know, that may be a bit quicker. But if you're in, like, another application or something and you want to switch, there's a bit of a lag and stuff. Maybe the S4 is better than the other ones, but, you know, I had that HTC Sensation. It was a dual-core device, you know, 1.5 gigahertz, and just the lag was unacceptable.
The two fastest phones right now are the S4 and the HTC One. And if neither of those satisfy you, have you looked at an iPhone? Have you played with an iPhone?
I've played with an iPhone. Just
the 5?
The screen is a little, after looking at these newer ones with the larger screens, that sort of fit in my hand. The screen's a bit on the small side, but I would rather stick with an Android device.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and let you go because you're breaking up pretty bad with the car noise and stuff. And, well, you know, I am not seeing what you're seeing now. I mean, at least on the iPhone 5, right now, I touch an app and it comes up real quick. The only lag that I see is like if I bring up a web browser and I load a web page, there's a little slowness there depending on
That said, the iPhone is a snappy interface. They really do work to make it fast. And there definitely are some Android devices and old Windows devices, like old whatever it was called, mobile before.
Windows Mobile.
Windows Mobile.
There were definitely some devices where, especially some of the early Android devices, where like you pressed a button,
it would take
and
a while.
It would take
the buttons
like,
would actually stack up.
Like
you could start
half
typing,
a second or a second or two, and you could start typing, and you could type ahead of it. That's hard to do on the iPhone unless something weird's going on and it's for some reason something's chewing CPU. But mostly that's gone with most modern Android devices.
Well,
that's gone.
Artist focusing on the S4. If his wife has the Galaxy S4 and he's unhappy with how that thing performs, there's no satisfying.
Yeah, there's an off chance, an outside chance that she's running a ton of stuff in the background and has a lot of services going, and maybe that's
maybe
got something to do with it.
A smartphone without any apps on it.
Well, I'm thinking if you run like a Google Nexus, like with stock Android on it, I mean that should be as clean as it's going to get without extra stuff running.
I've got this Lumia 1020. It's a Windows phone device, and it is. What's interesting is when you tap something, there is a delay on this because the animation of the tiles swinging away, you know, when you tap it, instead of it just happening, the tiles get out of the way and then the screen that you want.
You can probably
up.
Disable that or shorten that in settings, I would assume. Can you turn off animations?
No.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So, you know, there may be things that he's seeing that are animation. The other thing is, you know, he specifically mentioned the phone thing, but if you're working with any device or any app that gets information from the internet, there will be a delay while it goes to the internet and gets it.
Including apps.
Including
not
apps.
Not just web browsing.
Right.
So it could be his reception or his local area or just even having Wi-Fi
or just
with
the fact that it's an internet
fast.
Connection.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not native to the device.
And he's also mentioned that he likes larger screens. I mean, larger screens have to be, more video has to be pushed to operate those. So I would think, you know, if you want faster response, you know, you have to, a smaller screen's going to get better response from the same hardware than a larger screen because it doesn't have to push as much and create as much video content for the screen.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if he was going someplace with, like, suggesting that there was some kind of, you know, conspiracy or design that was causing phones to not be
as fast. He knew it was him.
I bet he should talk to Stallman. Because I bet, you know, they could find a phone that actually just runs like a bare Linux kernel and you just actually type, you know, command lines
maybe
into a terminal window.
ATDT plus.
That's too slow.
No, but when you type it, it's on the screen right then and there.
By the way, Barrett, have you seen any evidence of, you have a Nexus 4, right?
Yeah.
Of Android 4.3?
I keep checking. Not yet.
Refresh.
Yeah, refresh. I've got it to where it checks almost every few minutes. So, yeah, I don't have it yet.
All right.
Is it supposed to be coming?
It's supposed to be
coming
today.
Yeah.
I'm seeing people on Twitter saying they've got it. So.
Hate them.
Sorry, Barrett.
Oh, wait, they're sending it out to people with MacBook Airs that have backlit keyboards.
Oh, you guys are just mean. Nope, I last checked at 8:48, nothing.
All right.
Last checked at 8:48, nothing.
We have a call.
713-526-5738. Greavehouse. Oh, yeah,
he's
screening a call.
Screening.
So I wasn't paying attention. So there's a hurricane coming, possibly.
Nah.
Because you got your information from Kron Saigai?
Absolutely.
And he said no?
Well, no. What most hurricanes coming from this point and coming at the angle, when they get close to the U.S., they curve north. And so it's really Florida and the East Coast that looks like it's...
And somebody's sending out pictures of the sky out there, and the clouds are supposed to be very interesting.
Yeah.
Did you see that? That's very pretty.
Oh, wow, that is cool.
Yeah.
It's like a ripple.
They're altocumulous clouds out tonight. All right, Groovehouse. Wow,
yes.
We lost a call, or somebody hung up on you, or
no.
Gave up?
Yeah, no, we're good.
All right. Who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Bill.
Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
First time calling. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
You guys are great.
What can we do for you?
I'm a dinosaur. I'm still running around with a dumb phone. Because most of the time when I want to talk to people, I'm sitting in front of a desktop with a keyboard. And it's driving me nuts typing SMS messages on my pen keypad, my phone. But nobody can tell me what I can use these days on a Linux desktop or Windows to send SMS messages.
One way to get around it completely, I know that a lot of the providers, well, they'll have SMS gateways you can go, and maybe they'll have a web page. The thing I like to do, though, is if you swap over to Google Voice, you can go to voicegoogle.com, and you can do everything from the keyboard, which is pretty nice.
When Groovehouse and I were talking about it before, while he was on hold, because he was asking me, there probably are some apps you can use to do that somehow, maybe, but yeah, what I said was, one thing is, of course, this isn't two-way communication, but you can send them by using email addresses.
Mm-hmm.
If you know the domain names for the email addresses for the providers, you can use
them. I rarely ever know their providers. I usually just have
a phone number. In that case, then my second suggestion was, if you get a Google Voice phone number, you can log into Google Voice, and then you can actually make calls as well as send and receive SMS text messages through your web browser, through your computer.
All right.
Also, things like Yahoo Chat or Yahoo Instant Messenger let you send SMS messages.
I've tried that before, and I have no success at it.
No success. None? Zero?
Yes, it just reports that it can't find the person I'm trying to send it to.
Huh. Well,
I think Google Voice is...
Mm-hmm. Google Voice is the way
to go. And the other thing is, once you set up your Google Voice number, whatever it is, if you want to give that out to people, then you can set it up so that when Google Voice gets the call, it will forward the call to your phone number, like your cell phone. Or you can have it send it to your home phone, or you can have it send it to both.
It's like a hunt
group. Isn't that the service that does like free voice to text transcriptions and emails you a transcript of a
Yes,
message?
Yes,
yeah,
it also does that.
Does everything, yeah.
Kind of poorly, but it gives it its best shot.
You get the gist of it sometimes. Or you can be really, really confused.
I tweeted one that I got about a week ago. It was unintentionally awkwardly, uncomfortably racist.
Can't be worth the actual language skills of most of the people who want to call me anyway.
You can send SMS from Gmail chat.
From Gmail what?
From Gmail chat.
Okay.
That's probably integrated through.
It's all kind of unified is what they're going
Google
for.
Voice,
yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, thanks for your call.
Good night.
Good night. I'm trying to envision, whenever somebody asks me about sending SMS from a computer, why?
Well, it was really nice for me when I was in Russia. I could send and receive text messages in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and make calls inside the U.S. from my computer.
Or if you lose your phone, it's always nice to be able to do it from a computer, you know? but really, like he said...
Or if you wash your phone.
Or you wash your phone. Any reason you're separated from your phone?
Is it because more phones or more people... I know Barrett, for example, is much more responsive to SMS than he is to any other medium. If I send him a text message, except here lately, if I send him a text message, he'll usually respond right back.
And younger generation. Probably anybody under the age of 30 is going to be that way.
But what I've done on my, I know this is not something that's possible to have all your friends or contacts do, but I have on the iPhone, I've set up certain email accounts to notify me that I have an email from them.
I need to do that. That's because I don't check my personal, like when things get busy with work or whatever, but the first thing to go is my personal email account. So,
right.
I mean, it's like backlogged by weeks and weeks and weeks.
But I have my wife in there. I think Dwight actually might be in there. People that if I get an email from that they're probably, it's probably time sensitive. So I have
it do what?
It's me.
It sends you a text message?
No. It makes an alert noise and pops it up on the screen.
Oh,
the phone.
Okay.
So my phone will vibrate or it'll make
a pop-up.
Huh?
It does a pop-up.
Yeah.
Is it the Gmail built into Gmail?
It's built into the Mail app on the iPhone.
Oh,
you can set up what they call, there's a VIP.
Oh, yeah. They just added that not too long ago.
Yeah,
you can basically
tag any of your email contacts or anybody in your contact as a VIP, and then it will give you a pop-up.
Yeah, I think that VIP thing was a fairly recent addition.
It's kind of nice, and then I'll go in and if I'm like going to do something where I know I'm going to be interacting with a certain group of people, I'll go and fave them real quick so that, like, when, like, maybe at DEF CON, I might do that to you and to Barrett so that if you send an email or what or call, I'll get an extra alert that says that, hey, this is happening. But in terms of sending SMS, I'm not a texter. I'm not, you know, if I, I'll do it for my phone on occasion, but I guess there's a more immediate feel to SMS than there is to other types of communication.
My entire familial relationship now revolves around SMS.
Really?
Yes.
Even when you're all in the same room?
Sometimes. Sometimes, you know, because I have one kid in Missouri. I have another kid living, you know, in another part of town. You know, Lisa works one place, I work at, so it's kind of like we can communicate all at once at the same time with the, it's me. And it really kind of has improves communication. I like it.
Well, devices have become kind of secondary. Like, I just the other night, instead of like turning, there was a sign to my right of me, there was someone to the left of me that wanted to see it. So instinctually, instead of just like grabbing the sign and saying, hey, look at the sign, I reach over, take a picture of it, and then show them the sign on my phone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that was kind of silly. But, you know, that's just the go-to device now.
Now I use my phone at the hardware store. I had to go and buy some loose screws. I had to get a screw loose. And I bought some loose screws. And, of course, the screws don't have a barcode or anything on them. So I just took a picture of the barcode thing on the bin that had the screws in them and showed that to them.
Could they scan it off the phone? I wonder, do they just key in the SKU?
They actually didn't care because they just needed to know what the price was, which they got off the picture, but they didn't care what the part number was because they don't inventory down to the screw level. But I would imagine they could have scanned the barcode had they needed to. So I at least thought I was that clever or that considerate. All right. So the caller, comment, Google SMS gateway, Wikipedia article, list of all SMS gateways available. So if you go to Wikipedia, there's a list of all the SMS gateways. But nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, that's the thing. You've got to know who the carrier is for the most part. Like, you've got to know, like, okay, they're on Verizon. And then people switch, too. And they don't, like, if I switch from one carrier to another, I don't put that update
out
there.
I just switched to T-Mobile. And I actually ported my number from AT&T to Google Voice. So my number that I've had for years is actually now on Google Voice.
See, that was fun with T-Mobile. T-Mobile in the early 90s had an SMS gateway where you could type stuff into a web page and let it go. And I actually embedded that on my web page. That was really fun. It's one way. You couldn't really reply back to the web page. But, you know, that stuff's been out there for a while.
Oh, okay. So we're winding down to the station break. We're going to do that in about 60 seconds or less. This is the Boo Cookbook, right? Hotel California?
Yep.
You mean everyone can hear that? I thought it was just in my head.
Well, you can never leave. It can never leave your head. All right, so no Geek Gathering coming up. We're going to do another hour of Technology Bites coming up after the break. So we encourage you to stick around. And also call in 713-526-5738 to get in the queue to be on the air for the second half of the show coming up in just a few minutes after we take this short station business break. But 713-526-KPFT, 713-526-5738. I wish I had a vine of Groovehouse right now. All right, so you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up. And each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston.
We had no quarrel with anyone. We only want to stop riding the buses until we are treated as any other passenger.
Tune in on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. for the best of our past, present, and future from the vault. From the Vault is a weekly hour from the Pacifica Radio Archives, a national treasure of interviews, performances, and important moments. In this weekly documentary series, From the Vault presents archival audio to bring history to life.
It sounds like Harvey Milk is trying to send a message out to other gay or non-gay people who want to run for public office.
Get involved. Build your base. Build your support. You can't just get out there and say, hey, I'm a nice guy and I'm going to vote right on all the issues.
From the Vault airs Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can hear a repeat overnight Saturday following the program after hours. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
And we're back.
Conducting commerce.
Trying to organize a tasty beverage.
Bitcoin.
With Bitcoin. I was trying to actually arrange to Vine the Groove House dance. I wanted to get a video of that because it was going to go viral. He was doing it. Was surreal, man. It was
that music. It put him in the mood.
That dance put me in the mood. It was, I was hypnotized.
He
sparkled someone else's eyes now, Groove House. All right. So 713-526-5738 if you want to be involved, engaged in the second half of Technology Bites here tonight, and you're listening live on a Wednesday night here in Houston.
I was going to say, the going back to the SMS versus client thing. So I think, and it seems to be true to me, I'm guessing to Barrett also, but I think especially like the younger generation, it's viewed as being less invasive to send a text message than to call somebody, because a call, you have to interrupt what you're doing to look at the phone to see who
right
it is,
that second,
and to answer the phone and communicate. Whereas if you send a text message, it's like, well, if they're doing something, they can look at it here in a minute or two at their convenience and then reply at their convenience and doesn't have to interrupt what they're doing at the moment. So I think from younger people's perspective, it's calling is viewed as being rude, almost as being rude, like walking up and just interrupting somebody in the middle of a conversation.
I don't buy the fact that younger people are trying to be polite.
I think it's just how they do things. It's easier. Yeah, I think it's
easier.
You can put a little bit of thought into it. You've got
to
record it.
It's so much more personal when you have to call.
But they just view calling as more of a hassle.
They don't want to be called, so they're not going to call. They prefer the text messaging because I buy it as a selfish thing more than a considerate thing. It's a cultural thing for them, but it's not based on, we really shouldn't call because the phone ringing will be so disruptive and they'll have to look at it, get on the phone and consider it.
Well, I mean, they are probably looking at it from their perspective,
right.
is that's how I would feel.
Exactly.
But they all feel that way. So.
Right, so it works out. Culturally, it works out, but I don't buy that.
But it's shifted for me. Like I originally was not a texter at all, and I didn't understand why people texted and all that. And then once I started hanging out with somebody mm-hmm. who texted, and I started texting with them,
yep. exactly.
it just built
yeah.
from there.
Exactly.
And so now my default is to text somebody instead of to call them, unless it's something that's like complicated and is going to take me like 4 or 5 text messages to try to get the information through.
Yeah, if it's
then
quick succession where everything is huge variable, it's easier sometimes on the phone, especially in professional situations.
I don't know.
It's a generational thing, I think. Yeah. But I mean, for me, it's like it's IRC 14.0. Because it's like, you just text with people and you type with people, and this just is an extension of that. Especially now that you can do it straight from the keyboard and go to a phone.
Yeah.
Well, I think also people, if you have members of your family or people who are close, I think you found it when you were texting with somebody. I was the same way. I was kind of like, I don't want to text, I don't want to do that. But once I began doing it regularly with my family, and that's the way my kids prefer to. And now my wife and I are both, we're in our 50s, and that's the way we prefer.
And texting with a full keyboard is definitely way more functional and easy.
The iMessage with the ability to text from your Mac, I have this up at work, and it's a lot of times this is how I use text. That's really handy.
And I mean, yeah, I started chat doing like online global chatting in like 88. So I mean, even though I had done years of online chatting, I still didn't view text messaging as the same or convenient. But when, once I started, had a couple of friends that texted a lot, and I started communicating that way with them, like, it made sense to me that it was a functional way to communicate.
See, I still like to write letters. I'll pick up a pen and paper.
Just, you know. Passenger
I love the idea of writing letters. In fact, I've gone out and bought, like, really nice paper and, like, fountain pens and
stamps.
No yeah. one takes the time to do really nice engraving these days. That's what I've noticed.
What amazes me, the email specifically, but, you know, I can understand abbreviated words and sentences and thoughts in a text message where you're thumbing it in on a phone or something. But what kills me, and I am guilty of it myself, email, where you have a full keyboard and you sit down and you have all the time in the world to type out a message that people don't write. They're just like, hey, Jay, what's happening? Hope you're doing okay. Listen, I have a question, blah, blah, blah. They don't do this. Like,
they go, sup.
They just go, my computer is broken. That is, you know, the subject is my computer is broken. Text of the body of the message is, I'm getting a blue screen whenever I do blah.
That's probably partially personality also, but also I think email is still viewed as quick communication. It's not viewed as this formal communication style where you have a salutation and a, you know.
I agree to a certain extent, but the primary group of people that send me email with computer questions are a result of my column in the Chronicle, which is mostly seems to be read by people who are 60 and up. A lot of times, and it just blows my mind, 80, 90-year-old people.
And they're the ones sending you, says,
and
my computer.
They're the
broke.
Ones that are, and they're sending misspelled, but, you know, all
they're,
in caps.
They're probably
that
just.
That could be for a different reason,
they
though.
They could be
that's
scared
not laziness.
To use a computer, yeah. And they're just happy that they got anything sent to you and that their computer didn't break.
One thing I have noticed, though, that there's, you know, the young, and this is a generational thing, I think the younger generation who's grown up with texting, they see, like, the shorthand form, you know, back, like, the T9 style of short words, you know, you are instead of your, you know, no parentheses, not a lot of capitalization. But the thing is, when we do that, and this very generational, when we do that, it's like kind of like jazz. It's like, we know the music rules, we know we're breaking grammar, we know that, you know, this is a shortened form. And what I've realized, even just looking at, like, applications on young developers and stuff like that, I don't think they know the difference. I think they think that's, mm-hmm. like, the way that you talk, and that's yeah. how you communicate, and it carries over into email, and they can't, you know, we've all heard the code switching, you know, because of the trial and stuff, but they can't necessarily, like, code switch. They can't say, okay, I'm going to be formal now. They just see it. That's how they communicate.
And it's become its own lingo anyway, so it's like...
That came out of... A couple of subcultures.
Yeah, they still stole it all from, like, the online hacker kind of geek stuff, which
it's
weird to see, yeah, like,
online,
laws and, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that was original online, like, hacking and...
A lot of it came out of AOL and CompuServe and Genie back in the days, yeah.
Early chatting systems. I mean, because, yeah, I was using, you know, probably at least half of the things, but the thing is it's grown a lot in the last few years, because... Early on, yeah, it was like hacking groups and online chatting, and then it became texting, like the teen texters took it over and extended way beyond like all these other new acronyms, and then it went into internet culture and they added more, and so now there's still, you know, there's stuff, some of it I see and I'm like, that's funny, like, you know, I was using that exact same acronym like 20 years ago, but then there's other ones I'm like, I have no idea what this means, but everybody's using it.
Well, and then there's the whole emoticon question, because I send an email to someone and they'll write back, like, don't take that tone with me.
Man, some people get really mad about people using emoticons.
Well, I don't much care for them, but I found out that if you cover your ass by sending a smiley
face.
Well,
that's why they exist, because when people were trying to communicate online in the 80s, you know, yeah, people couldn't.
But I feel you couldn't
discern
yeah.
tone.
I know.
And so you put a smiley face, and people go, "Oh, you know, it's relieving some pressure from this."
It really is necessary. It really is. And I thought it was kind of a one way street, because I was thinking, you know, these people, why are they? What do you mean, what tone? I'm not taking a tone.
So you type back, "What tone?" in all caps.
But then I got hit with an email from someone. had contacted me, and I thought they were mad. And I was like, and I totally blew it in my mind, blew it like, well, how, good God. I mean, I was just asking a question, and then had another conversation about it. Turned out that it was just different. You know, I got it wrong.
But
I think part of it was, is the way how shortened everything is. It's like, you know, because somebody had asked me a question and I asked them a follow-up question to get more information to help them out. And then like hours later, I got it. Never mind. Sorry to waste your time. And like, I thought that they were mad because I had asked the follow-up question and I didn't try to solve it immediately. Mm. But turned out that they had found their own answer.
That they were actually being more apologetic than accusatory.
Right. Mm. And but they didn't take the time to say, hey, you know, never mind. I found the answer to my problem. Thanks anyway.
It was like, just quick communication to tell you stop working.
Stop researching. You're off the hook. So, yeah.
Well, I still, I mean,
Let me get out the phone number so we can try to get some calls in the queue while we're having this conversation. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us here on Technology Bites, 713-526-KPFT.
Go ahead. I learned a long, long, long time ago that, like, when you are online and you are talking to people, either in email or live communication, chatting, whatever, if you put capitalization on, that means you're yelling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? It was drilled into my head all the time. And so every time somebody new came on, they didn't know what they were doing. You know, and they would start typing in all caps. You know, people are like, stop yelling. And in email, it continues. And that's pretty much considered a standard generally these days. But in my mind, like, they're yelling. Like, I honestly almost can't read it any other way. Like, when I see an email or a text message where somebody's typing in all caps, like, in my mind, the voice I hear is yelling.
Yelling, right.
Like, and it, I have to actively work to shut it off if I know
it's okay
that they
hurts
that they
little.
Didn't.
So
need
when
to
I
be
was
yelling.
When I was they doing the helpline it. Column okay before hurts. Jay took it over,
I had the same experience.
And I would get these. I'd get a lot of emails, and just in general, early on. And the thing, first thing I would always say at the start of my reply was, first, a tip. Please don't type in all caps in the online world. It's considered yelling. And I'd type that as yelling, exclamation point.
But the thing
and
is,
go into it.
But if they don't catch that, they just it's considered, oh, he emphasized the word yelling.
Right.
But when I read it, I hear it's considered yelling.
Right, and that's the way. Right.
It's like Morgan Freeman quotes.
Every time they would get they would apologize in their reply back to me, and it wouldn't be in all caps. And when they email me again, I never saw it. One time I had somebody say to me, I do that because I can't see very well and it's easier for me to see. That happened once. But at no time did anybody ever say to me, you know, you jerk.
They said, I was yelling.
I have a voice modulation problem.
No, but see, now, Dwight did the helpline column for the Houston Chronicle up until maybe, what, 12 years ago now, 12, 13 years mm-hmm. now. But those people that were writing him, a lot of them are still writing me.
They're a lot older.
And they're a lot older, and they're typing in caps again because they can't see. You know, it's like,
you know, but you can make the font bigger without going to cast.
These are the people that cut my
emailing.
They cut my column out and save it in a manila folder in their desk in case that problem comes up and their operating system still exists. But, yeah, so I get it where I have to remember because that's the other thing in email is not there's no tone, there's no intonation, there's nothing like that. And there's no age and there's no gender. So I will be having an email conversation back and forth trying to solve someone's problem. And then they'll finally, we'll get to the bottom of it. We'll solve it. They'll email me back and they'll say, thanks so much. I'm 91 years old. I'm trying to figure this out, you know, and get some email from my grandkids. It's like, holy cow. I didn't realize I was dealing with somebody who's twice my age, but you know, bless their hearts. They're trying as hard as they can. But you don't get a sense that you're dealing with someone who's might be on in years and have some other needs for their computer than you.
I think here's the problem. This is, I found a quote.
An XKCD?
It's stolen from there, but it is a real quote. It says, 100 years ago, it took so long and cost so much to send a letter that it seemed worthwhile to put some time and thought into writing it. Now, the quickness and the cheapness of the post seem to justify the feeling that a brief letter today may be followed by another next week, a line now by another tomorrow. That was Percy Holmes Boynton, Principles of Composition, 1915. So they thought the art of letter writing went out, 100 years ago. Well, it's only gotten worse.
You know the thing that, so I like emoticons. I grew up on the internet at a time where they were, in the circles I ran in, used extensively. I mean, insane, huge, long alligators, ASCII art basically was incredibly popular and very clever, and it was part of the cultures I ran in.
Fixed with cultures.
So I really liked that stuff, and I used emoticons a lot because I was sarcastic a lot, and so I had to in order to let people know I was, at the end, to let people know I was joking so they wouldn't want to come punch me in the face.
Or still want to punch you in the face.
Or they want to punch me in the face for the right reason.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
But the funny thing is, like, I like the ASCII emoticons. And so the whole thing now where email systems take your sideways
emoticon and turn it
in an icon, it pisses me off to no end. So I intentionally now, whenever I put emoticons into my emails and anything, I actually intentionally don't put colon parentheses. I put colon space parentheses so that it won't automatically convert it.
Flip it around. I only extensively use K-pop emoticons. I do them upside down.
All right. Yeah. So
we've got a funny story.
We have a funny story from one of our callers. So 713-526-5738 if you want to get in line. Beyond the air, we've got plenty of open lines, only one call in the queue, which we're about to take. So dial 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do you offer up to us tonight?
Up next for sacrifice, Lorraine.
Lorraine.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I'm only 55, so I don't consider myself that old.
You're not.
But I was put in my place. My niece, before I started texting, we were communicating by emails, and then I finally started texting, and family members were all around one day, and I said, it's so sweet. Every time Carla signs off, she signs off lots of love.
My wife, who is also 55 years old, that's what she thought, too. For the longest time, she goes, everybody's, my job is so nice. They email me and they say lots of love all the time.
I know. And then I was very embarrassed, and they all started laughing. And I'm like, no, that's laugh out loud. Everyone was doing at the time. But I still, when I text, I finally started texting, I still do not do abbreviations because I'm not sure what they all mean. So I get the full words all
that's
the time.
Smart. That's smart.
Anyway, so I'm slowly coming into it.
Well, that's a great story. That's a great story.
So lots of love, guys.
Lots of love.
Okay, good night.
Thanks.
See, we have some that I've lost that people don't seem to use that I thought were really cool.
Like what?
One of them I used to use all the time was IMHO.
I still see that.
Yes. I don't see that one ever used online.
Yeah. I see it on Twitter a lot.
You see LOL a lot, but you don't hardly see ROFTL.
Well, I think that's because all of the internet has become IMO. There's no fax.
There's no H anymore.
Here's one that I don't. I saw it, and I didn't know what it meant, and I still see it occasionally, and I kind of get it, but does anybody know the origin of Rofflecopter?
I don't know what the origin of it is. It's maybe from,
is it something awful?
6 to 8 years ago. Yeah, I don't know where it came
4chan
from.
4chan or something. It was just one of those things that when, WTF barbecue and all that stuff, it just became,
OMG, WTF,
and it was
BBQ.
Weird. A lot of those things, it's like I saw them pop up multiple places all at once, which was really weird because, like the whole 1-1, exclamation point, that was just kind of an exaggeration of
Nestor
on IRC.
That was based on where did that come from? That was based on a character called Biff.
But I'm saying even, like, just in IRC, I even saw that with people that never read stuff. Like, it seemed like independently, like TEH and stuff.
Biff text is, and that actually goes back pretty far. It was called Biff text. And the deal was, yeah, like turning exclamations in ones and a lot of, like, misspellings. Not THE, though. I don't know if that specifically came from that. I don't know the origin of THE.
Well, I guess we would just, like, the thing that stands out in my head is, you know, we would, you know, if someone wanted to make a lot of emphasis, you would type in, you know, whatever you want to type, and then just lay on the exclamations and then put in a one. And sometimes mm-hmm. even, like, type out O-N-E, you know, mm-hmm. in the stream. Yep. You know, just that silliness, you know, take it to the next kind of level. So I think that's where that came out of. Because you had, you know, like, falling out of my chair, then you had, like, rolling on the floor, and then you had all these other things, you know, all those LMAs, you know. And
yeah,
you know,
LMAO.
Yeah.
Roller skates.
Yeah, I think Lawler, all that stuff came after that. And then someone actually made
Ruffle skates.
Ruffle skates. Someone actually made the really cool Ruffle copter
logo
in ASCII. And that's when it took off.
That's the first time I saw it was in ASCII. I saw a Ruffle copter.
Yeah.
And roller skates. There's somebody skating an ASCII roller skate.
Although I think the Rafflecopter came before the actual graphic did, but I think that's what kind of got it a lot of legs, and that's when everyone kind of knew what it was.
713-526-5738. Groovehouse, there's a call coming in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Just wanted to alert you.
Let's say one of my good ones was FTW.
Yes.
Gamer culture versus... drag tattoo culture. Because I knew tattoo culture, and I hadn't heard the gaming culture version, so it confused me for a while.
I saw LOL on America Online, and it was when I was, like, chatting up. I was also very young. I was probably, like, 10 or 11, and I was, I think, hitting on this girl, and someone said LOL, and I thought I meant Love Online. They were laughing at me, though.
Yeah, there's the ASCII Ruffle copter.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's actually an animated GIF Ruffle copter ASCII. Have you seen that one? If you can see it all the way through there. Yes, there was a brief moment while I showed my monitor screen to...
To the radio.
No, I didn't show it to Flicked. I didn't show it to the microphones. They can't see it. I wonder if I can get a larger version.
So, I mean, with anything, it's like the oldest pub in Ireland. It's like there are 100 of them, you know. But people are saying the first time they can track down the use of Rafflecopter was in a Warcraft 3 forum in January of 2004 by Steiny S. If that can be trusted.
713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air with us, Groovehouse is standing by. Just screen your call.
I wanted to, instance of the FTW thing.
Yes.
Where I...
For the win, as some know it, or the world.
In gaming culture, it means for the win, but I knew it from tattoo culture, which means blank the world. A bad word.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And the first time I saw, it was actually a Dell commercial, like a 2-page ad in maybe Wired magazine or something, with like their like extreme XPS gaming system that I guess maybe was based on the Alienware purchase or something, you know. And so it's like, you know, like with this gaming system, you know. And it just, like, in huge letters, just like, FTW. And I was like, wow, Dell's really got some edgy marketing here. I can't believe they did that.
I know I've told this story before, but there was that cell phone commercial a couple of years ago or several years ago where they were going through all the acronyms, like Laugh Out Loud, LOL. And they would say the acronym, and then they would say what it meant in this conversation. They'd go back and forth. And the last one that they used in the commercial was, she said, WTF. Wow, that's fantastic. But you thought, holy cow, they're about to...
Wait.
Unfortunately, they didn't do that. So.
Do people still do ASL?
No, not since you've got social media to where you can actually see pictures. Now they just, I think, go through people's photo galleries.
That was very popular on AOL. I'm pretty sure that one's
A
that
slash
one
S slash yeah. L slash... Yeah.
And what is that?
Age, sex, location.
Oh.
The location never really came around in the early days. It was more just ASs. I mean, it's, you know, whatever. But that's how it's, you know, you want to talk to other 13 or 14 year olds, not, you know, someone that's 40.
SMH was the one I just became aware of only recently. For
sure. Oh, yeah. Shake my head. Yeah. The entire Breaking Bad panel is now available the entire hour on AMC's website.
From SDCC?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. We got a call of the queue. We got Groovehouse screening a call. Oh, it looks like we got some good questions coming up. All right, Groovehouse.
I actually didn't know. I was just going to say the SMH. I didn't know that one, and I saw it up around a lot. I also, there was some other one, but SMH was one I wasn't sure of, so I looked it up. But it's funny because they were giving like two different meanings for it, and they're like, it means, you know, somebody was saying it means so much hate. Like, which, it's funny because shaking my head and so much hate are kind of related, but one of them has like a darker connotation than the other one, you know. So I don't know
and
which
you,
one.
And depending on which way you interpret it, the message that it's included with can take on a completely different meaning if you do so much hate versus shaking my head.
FML is a good one, too.
Mm. That only has one meaning as far as I know, right?
As far as I know, yeah.
Okay. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Winston.
Winston, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, I listen to you guys a lot on, from your archives.
Okay.
I was listening to one of the archives and Jay was going to hook up his two Macs with an Ethernet cable. And then he was wondering if, when they're communicating, on that network, would they still be able to access through their Wi-Fi the Internet?
And they did. And
they did. Oh, okay.
Yes. I connected an Ethernet cable from one iMac to the other, and I was browsing the web on one of them, and it was continuing to browse the web, but I pulled a file over from the other computer, and it just pulled it right over the cable.
Yeah, cool.
It was okay. So fast that I'd forgotten that I'd hooked up the cable, so the file transfer from one computer to the other was so fast, I thought, I'm going to go ahead and pull that same file down to my laptop, and it took, you know, like an hour.
Huh.
So, yeah, it works pretty well. You know about that, Barrett? Like, you can take an Ethernet cable between two Macs, plug it in, and it'll convert to a crossover.
Yeah, the auto MDIX.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They used to have to go find your own cable for that, a crossover cable.
Huh?
You used to have to find crossover cables find a hub that had an uplink or something.
Yeah,
plug
both into a hub. But you can
that's really nice. That's especially if you've got if you're gonna move anything over like half a gig. I usually hook up, you know, two laptops because I mean transferring, especially if they're like modern like giggy speeds versus like, you know, 8 to 11 in.
Not for me now. I don't have an Ethernet port.
Yeah, you've got to shell out the $30 to go get the adapter.
So, did you have another question about that?
No, that was it. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for your call. And thanks for listening to the archives.
Yeah,
support the archives.
Bye.
Oh, you're going to give that to me? No?
It's just showing you.
I know it exists. Dun, 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 dun. How fast is it?
Whoa.
Wow.
About 32 feet per second per second.
That was brilliant. That was actually funny. Now he's got to go get it. So when I asked Flicted how fast... first of all, Flicted held up a USB Ethernet dongle that, you know, for MacBook Airs, which have no Ethernet port. Apple's like the Barbie of computers. They get you for the initial payment for the device, but then all the accessories, the matching handbags and all that stuff, cost extras.
The little pink car.
Yeah, so they make this dongle that you can plug in the USB port, which allows you to do Ethernet over USB. Thunderbolt. And so Flicked held his up and showed it to me, and I thought, you know, so I asked him how fast it was, and he tossed it across the room. So that was...
I want to see Flicked through a Chrome tab now.
I wanted to see the emoticon he put. He had a real-life emoticon on his face when he did it, which is a smiley. So, and then I had that one, the big O underscore little O. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air with us, we got about 30 minutes left in this show. Calls have been great so far. We're having a great conversation about internet culture and emoticons and emails and all kinds of stuff. So, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Kevin.
Kevin, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Hey, I got a internet security question for y'all.
Okay.
I don't know why I did this, but I took the plunge and downloaded the 8.1 preview.
That's a heck of a plunge.
And then when I got 8.1, actually I don't have any problem with that, but my Trend Micro doesn't work with it, so I have to run Windows Defender, and I was hoping y'all might know something about an antivirus that works with 8.1.
Well, actually, Windows Defender on Windows 8 and 8.1 is a full-featured antivirus program. It has antivirus and spyware. It's, you know, it's not necessarily as robust or have as many features as something, you know, a third party, but it actually gives you a pretty decent protection. I'm not familiar with any at the moment that that are fully compatible with it, but probably a little Googling might find something. AVG tends to keep up with it, and often when there is a preview version of Windows out, Norton will release a beta version of Norton Security.
I did go online, and they told me, well, you can try our beta.
Right. It's a beta operating system, so you may as well use a beta antivirus on it.
A lot of word on the web from various antivirus companies that are saying that Norton's not working with it.
Symantec's supposed to, but they're not really working all the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are complaining about it.
It's beta.
Yeah, well, I couldn't. I had Trend, and when I got to 8.1, I couldn't even open Trend up.
Well, I'm assuming that since you're the kind of person who lives life on the edge running beta software, that you're probably not the kind of person who's going to be susceptible to viruses, right?
Well, all I know is I have the pro version of Malwarebytes, and it has come into play occasionally in the past month since I did go for the 8.1 preview.
Well, obviously,
you know, for the paid version, you get that real-time scanning protection. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the free version of Malwarebytes, because it actually did pop up once on me saying, you know, successfully blocked you from going to a suspicious website.
I'm really surprised to hear that there's enough of a difference in Windows 8 versus 8.1 preview.
Any OS update, the architecture changes and things that
yes.
Something like antivirus, which goes down deep into the system, is not going to see what it expects. Have you tried uninstalling Trend Micro and reinstalling the latest version?
Yeah, I did, and since I don't know how to, like, disable Malwarebytes, I would have to uninstall and reinstall that, which really in and of itself is no big deal, because I, like I said, I have the paid version, I have all my codes that I need, product IDs and all that, but I did try to do a reinstall, and it stopped, it got stuck and said, you know, this is a certain error, and when I contacted Trend, they said, well, since you're running... They told me it was beta.
It is
8.1, but when Microsoft calls it preview, and the operating system, I've had zero problems with it. It's running fine.
The
only thing was with the internet security.
It is.
But if you think Windows Defender is good enough, well, because I do have the pro version of Malwarebytes, and I just because I'm paranoid, will occasionally run Hitman Pro. Then I'll
just stick
with Windows Defender, and I may not even reinstall my Trend, even though I paid for it. I may, when they come out with the final version of 8.1, supposedly Trend is supposed to work then, but...
It will all catch up eventually, and and you may have to play a little loose right now if you want to continue running the preview on 8.1. But this is going to hit the shelves soon, the digital online virtual shelves. But it's going to hit the shelves. And all the major players who want to provide antivirus software to the Windows community are going to have to make versions that work.
So the timeline for Windows 8.1, Microsoft has said it'll be finished by the end of August and will be shipped off to the computer makers who'll put it on their computers. You probably will be available as an update to Windows 8. 8 users probably around late September.
Is the release version going to overwrite the preview version, or are you going to
That's a good question. I'd like to know the answer.
Did you upgrade Windows 8, or did you?
I upgraded Windows 8, and then I don't have any desire to go back, but when I did it, they will tell you at the Microsoft website that you can't go back.
Okay,
like
right.
You put 8.1, you're stuck with it.
You will be able to upgrade directly to the finished version.
Okay, good.
You can.
But I have no problems with the 8.1.
It's very solid.
Yeah.
It's very solid.
It's not too, like, as you said, there's not a whole lot of difference between 8 and 8.1, but some of the stuff on the start screen is good, and although they put what they call the start menu on the desktop screen, it to me, that was a total waste of time, because all it does is take you to the start screen.
Well, here, do this. Have you right-clicked on that start menu?
Yeah, where we get that list of stuff. Yes,
yeah, that's very useful.
But you could do that on 8 as well.
Could you?
Yeah, because I had 8, and I would move the cursor to the lower left and right click and get that program feature, task manager, all that stuff. So, but that icon that's down there, to me, it is useless, because you just press the Windows key on the keyboard and you get to the start screen.
Right.
So that part of it I didn't understand. But when you're on the start screen, I don't know if you guys have seen 8.1, but there's like a down an arrow
right.
in there, and that'll
it takes you to the
all
apps.
Your apps.
Right.
And that's cool to me, because you
yep.
don't have to have all the tiles on that. If you don't want to have all the tiles on the main start screen, which I don't, I just have what would be a live tile going, those, and I hide, put them all on that secondary screen. But, and if I need them, just go to the screen, hit that arrow, all the different applications and programs run.
Yeah,
but on the antivirus not working, it's weird to me, because I do. It seems like both CCleaner and Glarisoft work with 8.1, because I have them on my computer and they seem to run fine.
Neither of those do what Trend Micro does. Trend Micro has its hooks down inside the operating system. Those
mm-hmm.
others just kind of run and scan. But Trend Micro is down deep inside taking advantage of features in the operating system. When that stuff under the hood changes, things like antivirus programs and utilities that run in the background are usually the first to break.
Yeah, I'm not tech savvy enough to have foreseen that. I'm probably one of the people who shouldn't have downloaded 8.1, but again, I've had no problems running the operating system. It was just with the antivirus. So,
well,
I
just recommend, you know, waiting until the antivirus and anti-malware programs catch up to 8.1.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you think in and of itself, Trend is better than Windows Defender?
It's, you know, my experience with viruses and spyware is that none of it makes you bulletproof.
Yeah.
Really, the best antivirus is your behavior on the net.
I hear that from a lot of people.
So if you're running around, you know, clicking on stuff you shouldn't be clicking on, then you're going to invite that stuff onto your system right past. Basically, you push the firewall. So don't listen to that firewall. Don't listen to that antivirus program. You come on in here and you just install whatever you like. So you have to be careful with what you're doing. I've run as minimal as I can with my antivirus on a Windows system. I'll keep a good antivirus going. And if I start to notice odd behaviors, then I'll kick off a scan with malware bytes or something like that. But I've heard very, very good things about Windows Defender or Windows Internet Security or whatever they're calling it.
The original was
Microsoft Security
Essentials, but it's just Defender and 8.1
right.
now, right?
Yeah,
right.
It does a good job.
Windows Defender and the Windows.
But I would also recommend that, you know, back up your data. If your data is important to you, keep a backup. You can always reinstall your operating system, but you can't recover those old photos.
Okay, I really appreciate your thoughts on that.
All right, well, have a good evening. Thanks
for
your call.
Have a good evening, guys.
All right.
Good night.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and download the Windows 8.1 preview because I'm insane.
Now, one thing to be careful of.
Alert.
Are you doing this? Alert. Are you doing this in Parallels?
I am.
Don't upgrade that in Parallels. Don't do that.
Don't do that. Why not?
Because it...
do it and find out.
Do it. Just do it. Just do it.
Probably because Parallels doesn't have the stuff
to be able to run it properly.
Parallels, if you download the ISO and do a clean install, a new virtual machine, that'll work. But for some, every time I've tried to upgrade it, there has been, it doesn't complete. It backs out and says no. Did you just in the last couple of days download an update to Parallels?
No.
There's a new update to Parallels. So before you do that, you might want to get the update to Parallels. At the very least, make a copy of that virtual machine.
I see. All right. Cancel.
But how large is that, too? Isn't it like pushing a gig?
I don't know.
And change?
I have no idea.
And you're going from Windows 8 to
8.1.
8.1, yeah. Yeah, so what I would do, make a copy of that Windows 8 virtual machine, and then try to run it, upgrade Parallels, do the latest for Parallels, let the Parallels tools update Windows 8, and then try it. It's a hassle, but you'll be glad you did.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us.
Wow.
I know, this cable over here. I'm trying to avoid it. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Josh.
Josh, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, Jay. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I used to read your column.
Yeah, all right.
I'm in the market for a retail laptop, and I haven't bought one in, like, 2006. A computer that, you know, on a retail basis. I want to avoid the high-pressure sales when I do get it. I just want to be in and out and no one gets hurt. Any advice on that? My price point's around 400, give or take, 25 or 50 bucks either way.
Well, I haven't found very many companies that are high-pressure. None of the box stores strike me as particularly high-pressure. Best Buy.
By the way, I do work in IT, so I'm pretty, you know, I can do my own stuff. So.
Okay, well,
get it online.
You buy it online, it'd be the best way to save the hassle. You could also save some sales tax, depending on where you buy it from. But if I was going to go in and wanted to see what the current lineup looked like and how they felt, and, you know, in terms of how plasticky they were, or how lightweight they were, or what the display looked like and things like that, I just go hit up one of the big box stores, go to Fry's or go to Micro Center, go to Best Buy, one of them, and take a look. If anything, you're hard pressed to get any help at these stores, much less high pressure sales, because they're not making none of them make any commission that I know. Maybe Fry's, what do you know, Dwight?
Fry's is the most pushy. Like, usually when I go into the laptop section, someone will at least say, like, hey, you're looking for something. But if you just say no and act all cold, they'll yeah. wander away.
Micro Center is quite good.
Yeah.
Micro Center has a very good customer service, I think. And, you know, if you tell the guys, leave me alone, they'll leave
you
alone. They
will. Some of the funniest things I've heard has just been, like, hanging out, like, in the tech aisles at big box stores, mm-hmm. like, the misinformation that goes out and just the explanations that go out and just, you know, it's sometimes cringeworthy. But there are a handful of people that have been at Micro Center that I've seen there for, like, 8 or 10 years,
right.
and they seem to really know what's going
right.
on, especially because if you go over there and you talk about building your own PCs,
mm-hmm.
they tend to know what's going on. So, I mean, worst case, if you get someone that doesn't know what they're talking about, go to where they sell the chips and the upgrades and just ask them, because
right.
they're a little bit more glued in.
Great.
It seems
that's
like.
About all I had. Other than, are there any boards that still have IDE on them?
Any motherboards IDE? Yeah.
There are some. You just have to look, but yeah, there's still some with legacy. But you're not going to get two, but you might get like one, and they're all going to have, you know, SATA.
You look
on there.
Maybe on the bottom shelf, like kind of in the back.
They might be like $10.
A lot of dust on them.
Thanks, guys. That's all I had.
All right, thanks for your call. Good luck.
Now I'm wondering what he needs IDE ports for.
You can also get an ID on a card.
IDE drives.
Yeah, you can get adapter cards.
Yeah, you get an adapter card for IDE. So,
all right. 713-526-573.
Well, earlier, Dwight's blue screening over here. The first one was a legitimate one inside OS X.
This is
right?
This is what the Windows 8.1 blue screen looks like. Complete with a unhappy emoticon at the top of it.
Now, the one you were getting the Apple blue screen earlier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we're not going to make fun of what you said, but we're going to make fun of, is it emoticon or emoticon?
Emoticon.
Do you say emotion? I'm very emotional right now. It's emoticon, I always
It's emoticon.
Thought.
Whatever. Whatevs.
And you agree with us? We're split.
Yes.
It's emoticon, yeah, okay.
Because you emote.
Emoticon.
Emotions.
Emoticon.
I second that emoticon.
Emoticon.
Emoticon. What's he saying?
You're saying emoticon.
Emoticon?
Emoticon.
That's like an immodest con.
Ooh.
No, it's emoticon.
All right, emotopatopoeia.
Onomatomoticon. Onomatomoticon. All right. Well, let Groovehouse put this person on hold. He'll bring us the next person in line. So, hello, Groovehouse.
Hello.
So who do you have for us?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to know quickly, like, what's, like, a general rule of thumb for, like, security certificates? Like, say I go to Cafe Express and they're, I want to get online, but it says something's wrong with their certificate or...
You're probably getting like an expired certificate or something like that. It's an SSL certificate. So usually the deal is, and it depends on kind of where you're going. If I'm going to an e-commerce site or if I'm going to something like that that has a lot of business, I'm going to want to see that whole thing. Some browsers will actually turn it green because there are different levels of SSL encryption and things like that. If a site has everything that it's supposed to have and it has like one of the EV certs, like one of the nicer high-end certs, the whole address bar will turn green. At the very minimum, you shouldn't get a broken thing. You should get a little bit of a lock. But if you start getting security exceptions, best case is that they let the SSL cert expire. And it's just saying, hey, this is what's wrong with it. Do you want to accept it? You can add it as an exception. Worst case is you've got a redirect and you're not actually going to the site you think you are. So whenever I see an expired certificate, I'm always extremely careful. Cafe Press, I would think they do enough business to where they can afford to keep their certs up to date. So I would be leery of that.
Yeah, I would be leery. They might have forgot. I mean, there's three components that a certificate can fail on. It can fail on the name that you typed into your browser doesn't match the name on the certificate. The valid date range for the certificate is not matching the current date either. Usually it's because it's expired. So today's date is after the last final valid date of the certificate that they bought. Or it could be that the registrar, the CA, the certificate authority that signed the certificate isn't recognized by your browser.
You can install root certificates
the thing is,
if you need
to. Like you can, anybody can self-sign a certificate, or you can create your own certificate authority and sign certificates. But a browser, a web browser has a list of anywhere from 20 to 100 or more known certificate authorities built into it. So Thought's in there, VeriSign's in there, Komodo's in there, Starfield Technologies, there's a bunch of them. But any certificates that's signed by any of those people, the browser, when it gets the certificate and looks at it, will say, oh, this says it was signed by Thought. I have a certificate here for the Thought CA. Oh, it matches, so Thought really did sign that certificate. They are the ones that are validating that this is who they say they are. So those are the three reasons the certificate can fail.
Going back to Cafe Press, though, I'm hitting the Cafe Press site right now, and I'm getting no indication that there's a cert issue.
So you could have a browser hijack. What could be happening is it could be going in, it could be changing your DNS to where you're not hitting the real site.
The other thing you could have is that your system clock or your computer clock's out of whack.
Check your dates. If you've got some weird CMOS battery stuff and it resets your time and your time's really off, it could have bad certs. Usually, I always like to use Chrome because out of all the browsers, Chrome seems to give me the most information about certificates when we're troubleshooting certs. So if you go and you see a bad issue, just open it up and you can actually see what the browser thinks is wrong with that cert, and then you can start making decisions based on that, you know, how severe it is. But if Jay's getting the green bar on Cafe Press, you're probably not at the real Cafe Press.
I'm not seeing the green bar you're talking about, though.
Oh, you're not like a... Like right here, like Google, that turns green.
Well,
It's more expensive cert. It's like it's $1,000 cert per year versus like $300 per year.
Well, Cafe
you're
Press does
VeriSign.
Yeah.
But I'm getting no alerts to indicate that there's a problem with the site certificate or anything when I have seen on sites.
Cafe Press.
Yeah, with Cafe Press. So it's possible your system clock could be out of whack. It's also possible that you're not actually getting to Cafe Press.
Okay, I was
looking
at Cafe Express.
Express.
So you're
trying to... Like, you just go into Cafe Express. I think the last time I went in one...
So you're trying to get on their Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
And maybe there's like a page you have to... You have to.
That's radically different.
That's radically different.
Oh,
yes.
That's different. Never
now,
mind.
Now I have seen it. Now I've got a our guest Wi-Fi at my office has a bad cert on it. Yeah. So if you go to connect to our guest Wi-Fi, and
it's just a test for your guests.
Yeah. If you go to connect to our Wi-Fi, you connect to the Wi-Fi. And then you load up the web page, and if you're using Internet Explorer, it doesn't care, which it never does. But Firefox and Chrome will throw up, say, "Hey, you know, wait a minute, the cert here is not
even right." Internet Explorer 10 or 11.
I haven't tried 10.
I was
going to
say it might be a chain intermediate chain issue,
but it's not a big deal. It's just so I wouldn't be surprised to see that there you are getting a cert warning if you're trying to connect to Cafe Express's public Wi-Fi.
Right.
That I'm not worried about. If I was visiting a website where I was going to ask me to put credit card information into, then I would be worried.
Okay.
But if you're talking about if it's talking about the authentication page that Cafe Express is using, say you're using our free Wi-Fi, you must agree not to commit crimes while you're doing this. I wouldn't be surprised to see a cert issue with that web page.
Oh, okay. As long as it's no big deal, and then I was on SoundCloud just listening to somebody's mix, and the same thing happened, and I was wondering, should I be worried about even listening to that? Or
I was SoundCloud, I don't think they've got an HTTPS, though, do they?
I don't know.
SoundCloud, you're not paying
but
any
if
money
they
into.
Did, I would think that they would keep up with it.
Well, just to be on the safe side, I mean, I went to Cafe Express's website. That's fine. Did you go to the SoundCloud?
I went to SoundCloud. They paid for the nice cert, too. It's green. So if it's not, I would run some spyware stuff and check out your browsers.
You might want to scan your system to make sure you don't have some other issue going on.
Okay.
We list some free tools at geekradio.com under the spywares link. At least hit your system with malware bytes and see if it detects anything.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Yes, bye-bye.
All right. Well, we got time to get this last call, but we're going to have a little chat first.
I was just going
to
quickly say, we were talking about him saying emoticon, so I'm going to give you the opportunity. So how do you pronounce CMOS?
CMOS.
CMOS. CMOS.
You said CMOS.
Yeah.
That's why I was asking, because I say CMOS.
I say CMOS.
I say,
but you said CMOS.
Did I say CMOS before?
Yeah.
But Dwight also says BIOS.
BIOS. I was going to say BIOS.
No, you said CMOS when you were talking.
I also say BIOS.
I think I flip back and forth. The thing is, there's so many things that I saw that I read about ever before I ever pronounced them that I'm kind of set in my ways. And you see that a lot, like with Linux users that didn't come up in like Unix corporations where they just kind of learned on themselves.
Yep.
Like Etsy is a big kind of thing. Like, how do you say /etc? And depending on what you get, you can tell where they use Linux.
The
Windows.
One of the funniest ones I've heard is I had a guy I worked with, and he would have CONF files, right? And so I was like, oh, it's a conf file. It's a configuration file. It's a conf file. He would always say conf file. Go ahead to the conf file. I'm like, do you mean the conf file? Yeah, the conf file. He never changed his ways.
Tracer T. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up for the last? Probably the last call.
Probably the last call. Last call tonight.
Last call. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, get out of here. All right, last call is going to be Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, thank you. I like you guys. I listen to you guys on Wednesday when usually I'm going somewhere.
All right, but now you're not going anywhere. So what's
up? Now I'm sitting. I'm doing the proper thing. I'm talking with you and sitting in still motion.
All right, still motion.
Yeah, I've heard that one guy before had that problem. That had that reluctance to purchase an Android phone.
Yeah,
and my experience, just mine, the first Galaxy S phone that I had, I replaced it 4 times in a year. It burned up 3 times. Then they decided decided to scramble all my phone numbers, other miscellaneous stuff. Now they upgraded me to an S2. Now, though, when I answer, say if I'm going down the road and the phone rings and it comes up with a little screen, either I answer the phone or unanswer the phone, and sometimes I'll have to swipe that thing 7, 8, 9, 10 times before it moves over, so it actually answers the phone. Is that something inherent in the phone itself or in the software?
It could be either.
It's hard to say. It depends. If you ask the software guys, they're going to blame hardware. If you ask the hardware guys, they're going to blame software.
If the screen is cracked or has any kind of defect on it, that
nothing's cracked.
Yeah.
It's a brand new phone.
Yeah.
Well, now it's 4 months old, but when I had it, it was a brand new phone, and it worked fine, but I still had that glitch when I would get a phone call in. I'm doing something else on the phone. I get a phone call in, it pops up, and it won't answer the phone for a while.
Yeah, I've had that issue, and I had it with the Galaxy series. Like, I had a Samsung, and I just didn't like it at all. I got rid of it.
This is S2.
Yeah, so it's just an issue. That's why whenever I go Android, I still like to run stock Android whenever I can, because it just seems like it's a little bit snappy, it's a little bit faster. Once you get the handset manufacturers or the carriers going in and, like, you know, doing their own key entry things or doing their own messaging things, they tend to slow things down.
Including the update.
Including the updates. They'll mess things up. So I just like to get, like, you know, like carry the phones that get updates directly from Google that are just very vanilla, and I've had the best luck with those. But I tried to carry some Samsung phones for a while, and just I couldn't do it because the same issue you had. I actually switched providers because they kept dropping calls. They kept doing everything, but actually letting
them communicate. Yeah, that too. It's drop calls, yeah. Which one would you recommend? I listened to you earlier in reference to the gentleman you were talking with about his wife having the Galaxy S4.
What
would you recommend as a plain Jane, a vanilla type,
My handset's aging kind of. I mean, it depends, but I like the Nexus 4. That's what I'm carrying right now. Dwight's carried a handful of Android handsets.
One of the things that has started to happen is that because of people complaining about what the carriers and the handset makers load on it on Android devices, is that Google has started working with the handset makers to create essentially plain vanilla versions of popular phones. So,
and then they bought Motorola.
Right. They bought Motorola.
They haven't done anything with
it
yet.
August 1st. So that you can currently buy at the Google Play Store on their website a Samsung Galaxy S4 that's stock Android, and a Nexus HTC One, which is close to stock Android. There's a couple of features on the HTC One, like the camera has to work a certain way, so there are apps on there that are
HTC. You like the HTC One quite a bit, right?
HTC One is a gorgeous phone. The only problem with it is if you like having the ability to upgrade your storage, you can't do that on the HTC One.
Oh, okay.
But you can on the Galaxy S4. And another thing to keep in mind is coming soon is the Moto X, which is Motorola, the first Google phone now that Google owns Motorola.
That's going to be interesting because the Motorola's have always had good build quality and they've got a long line.
But supposedly it also will not have an SD card.
All right. We got to let you go, though. We're out of time.
Okay. Thank you much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. So, another great show. I will be here next Wednesday with Dwight and Groove House.
Yes.
And probably Peter Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
Barrett. Inflicted
will be on the ground.
Be on the ground in Vegas getting badges and so forth.
You mean it's not canceled?
I mean, I'm sorry. I was going to let you go even though it was canceled. I was going to let you go. All right. So we appreciate you tuning in.
No Geek Gathering.
No Geek Gathering.
But you can show up.
But you can show up.
Unofficial.
You can come to Vegas.
Yeah.
There's a big Geek Gathering. wait, it was canceled. Never mind.
And we'll be able to say No Geek Gathering next week, too.
Right. Okay. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Saturday, July 27th sees us slicing the 27th annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social at Houston's Last Concert Cafe. This KPFT benefit features Flounders Without Eyes, the Jimmy Lee Dean Band, Premium Blend, Pot Roast, the Hightailers, and from Austin, a 15-piece Talking Heads cover band, Heartburn. Performances by Mark Burma, Charity Ann, Atomic Nightingales, and Belly Dancing by the Tribe of Lilies will be blended in for a nonstop thrill. Doors at 3, musical start around 4.
The door fee is $20 for one or $30 for two, and the proceeds benefit your community radio station, KPFT. So join us at 1401 Nant Street, the Last Concert Cafe, when we'll be serving up the other red meat, watermelon. 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Meat, the other red meat. Meat, meat, the other red meat.
Are fuel prices making that old gas guzzler a liability? Well, it's a real asset to KPFT, running or not. We can use it to help pay the bills. So donate your vehicle to KPFT right now. You'll get a tax deduction, a KPFT membership, and the satisfaction of knowing that you helped support your favorite programs. It's a win all the way around. Just call toll-free 1-855-KPFT-CAR. That's 1-855-573-8227. To donate your car, truck, scooter, motorcycle, boat, trailer, or farm equipment, or just about any vehicle. We'll arrange to pick it up. It's that easy to dump your old vehicle and say goodbye to high gas bills. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR now. This is KPFT Houston. Thank you.
You're listening to 90.1.